Former Toronto Blue Jays first base coach, head coach for Team Canada, a number of different times in international competitions, Tim Leeper joining the program. Tim, how are you today?
Hey, it's great. I got to tell you, though, I'm the assistant coach. I got to give Ernie Witt his due credit. He's
the one that
led us to all success, so I kind of lay in the weeds there and try to follow his lead.
My apologies. Sorry, I'm sure you were the brains behind the operation anyway.
When we win, that's what I tell him for sure.
Right, exactly. Yeah, when you win, it's you. When you guys lose, it was his fault, right?
Yes.
So George Springer is now a Toronto Blue Jay. As someone who has been following this team my whole life, I'm quite excited about this. What do you make of the fit for George Springer in Toronto?
I think it's a great fit, obviously. He's the best player, arguably, but probably on the free agent market right now. And I know the one thing that the front office said they needed to do when the season ended and they were going into free agency, they needed to strengthen their defense and be better in all areas. And, you know, you got a center fielder who's going to sit at the top of your order. He's going to play great defense. He's going to do a lot of things for you. He's really great in a clubhouse. He's probably not going to be a vocal leader, but he's a guy that goes out and does his business every day. And as a guy that has sat on the other dugout and watched him, when you watch him and you watch him work, there's always a purpose to everything. And you know, when he comes up to the bat, he's going to have a great at bat and he's going to make you work and you're going to have to earn the out against him. He can beat you on defense. So there's an intensity to him, and this team's young and they were a playoff team. I mean, they feel like they're a playoff team. They won together in the minor leagues, but I think it's really important at the end of every year that you always get better and bring somebody into the clubhouse that's done a little bit more and has been somewhere where these guys have it. And I think he's just the perfect fit for a group that's already confident. And I think he just elevates their game to another level. And it's something they set out to do, and they got him. And you have to tip your cap to making your team better and getting a guy like George Springer.
That's what I was going to ask next about the locker room dynamic, because as you said, like, this is a group that they did make the playoffs a year ago, not necessarily there long, but they were in there. What kind of a message does this send to the players when you go out and get a guy, World Series MVP, has probably not seen his last All-Star game either? Like, what does this say to the players in that locker room?
Well, it says everything, and it's super important because, you know, nobody, you know, we think the fans become harsh critics of the front office when they don't get things done. The players are like 10 times worse than the fans. You know, I've been in situations where the trade deadline, we didn't do anything. Obviously, the trade deadline in 2015, we did a ton. And, you know, you have to send a message to the young group that, like, hey, we're in this with you, and we're going to do everything we can to win. And especially with a young team that's really confident like they are right now, If you weren't to get things done, they would feel like you took a step back, and then they would lose confidence in you. And I think what they did here is send a message to the guys that are already here. It's like, hey, we're serious. We know you're good. We believe in you, and we want to keep getting better. So, like, right now, I know the fans of Toronto, because I'm living it every day right now, are excited. The people, fans of the Blue Jays are excited they got George Springer. But I promise you there's no bigger fans of this move than the players that are already on the team.
What about the guys who are in the outfield and potentially in the DH spots as well? Because this is, right now, you have four outfielders for three spots, and now a couple guys who can DH as well. Do you have to, like, the Jays aren't going to not make this move because Randall Grichuk is there, but does a coaching staff or does a front office need to go talk to the guys who were there before and be like, hey, this is what we're planning with him, this is what we're planning with you, or is that something that you just kind of hope everyone's professional about?
Yeah, that sounds great. It doesn't usually happen where guys are professional. But everybody wants to play. I mean, nobody in the big leagues wants to go right and sit on the bench, and that's an important thing. So you have those discussions, but I think the real work isn't done yet. I think you communicate along the way the best that you can, and I still don't think they're done. I mean, I just to put things in perspective, like back in the winter of 14, you know, we were able to get Russ Martin and Josh Donaldson, who was the MVP of the league that year, and we still, like, we were into June, we were around 500, we were like 8 games back, and we still needed to make improvements to our team. So that being said, and not to paint a bad picture, there's still some work to be done. And the one thing that's great about this right now is they have a ton of prospects, and they can go out and get guys. They still have chances to go get better. They still have money to spend on the free agent market. And I think the discussions you have with the guys that maybe feel misplaced right now, you just try to be honest with them. And then in a few weeks when everything starts to settle a little bit more, like, then you can kind of start game planning and see what's going to happen then. But I still think there's a lot of moves to be made. I think it's a little bit premature for these discussions. And sometimes, like, guys, you know, it creates competition in spring training, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing either. It's never a bad thing to have too much depth, and if that's where they are right now, then so be it. I think that's a good thing.
Now, you said, like, the reaction so far has been mainly positive, people very excited. But we do get a couple of texts here on the show being like, I don't get why the Blue Jays are trying to acquire a cheater and stuff like that. While his numbers stayed consistent after that cheating scandal, is that something you think that Springer needs to address when he walks into this Blue Jays locker room for the first time?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to need to address it with the players. It's obviously going to come up in interviews with them. And hopefully, I get a sense here, that's not going to last very long. And I'm going to say this, like, this guy, when he walks into your clubhouse, he's a pro, and he goes about his business the right way. And, you know, that scandal, I feel like the blame is a lot more on the guys, the adults in the room, the people that should have known better. Obviously, the GM is paying a huge price for it. Obviously, the manager had to serve a year suspension for this. And, you know, the league and the league was not proactive. They had information to stop it, essentially, but they didn't investigate it until it actually got, you know, the cat got out of the bag. So in terms of the players, like, as long as they're remorseful and like George Springer is, like so be it. Like, just let it go. If you're going to fight it, then that's another thing. But the one thing he brings to, he's a class guy. He's going to do a lot in the community. It's obviously been well-written that he had the speech impediment. And the things he does, he has a camp for kids that have speech impediments, and he sends them. He's always giving of his time. He's going to be great in the community. So I think anything that happened back then, hopefully it's a really short mention, and then it just goes on. Because when it's all said and done, this guy's going to be a great member of the community. He's going to be great for baseball in Toronto. He's going to be great for baseball in Canada. And he's the type of guy you really want representing yourself. And I think it's just going to be a good thing. And like I said, I hope that the mentions of that are pretty short. I think he deserves that.
Now, we as fans have already started fantasizing what this lineup could look like. Do coaches do the same thing? Like, is there a group chat right now with, well, we could try this, 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 and this. Well, what about this? Like, are coaches getting as giddy as the fans are right now?
Yeah, you definitely do. I talk about when we got Russ and we got Donaldson, like that was like a big deal. Yeah, you start looking at it and start thinking, you get really excited about it. So yeah, you do. And then you know, your front office comes in, and then they have the lineup construction thing. They probably punch holes in all the lineups that you put out anyway. But it's exciting, especially now you got a team that's got a lot of depth. And I was on a show here in Toronto today, and we did the lineup construction thing, and it just looks really great with him. I mean, you can do a lot of things. If Biggio's, you know, leading off, and the amount of pitches he sees, and you put Springer in the two hole, and you know, he's a guy that gets on base and does things. I just think the depth they have, I think the 4 and 5 hole hitter in the Blue Jays lineup is going to come up a lot of times in games this year, with the pitcher at about a 25, 30 pitches struggling to get through the first, and with men on base. And I think with the talent, with the Gurriels, with the Bichettes, with the Teoscar Hernandezes, I think that they're going to have a chance to put a lot of games out of reach early and put a lot of pressure on other teams.
It is interesting how lineup construction has kind of changed over the last little while, because I think a lot of kind of, for lack of a better term, old school baseball people would think, all right, you just acquired a star center fielder. The guy can run, the guy can hit. Well, he's your number one hitter, like with the speed and everything like that. But it is much more focused on the on-base percentage guy in that number one spot now, isn't it?
It's big. And I think also, like, when you have a guy like Biggio, and he's the guy that kind of always gets left out of the conversation, but he gets on base. You know, there's times that he doesn't. He goes through little stretches where he doesn't, but who doesn't? But this amount of pitches he sees, too. Like you know, he's going to see 7, 8, 9 pitches in at bat, and he's going to make you earn your out. And when the pitcher's early in the game and he knows the guy's patient, and it's easy to think, hey, it's going to be easy to throw a strike here. Like, that's the hardest thing you can possibly do. And I just think it sets the rest of the lineup really nicely. But that being said, you know, you can put Springer in the one hole and move Biggio around a little bit too. So again, they got a lot of depth and they got a lot of different options they can go, but you know, pretty much 1 through 9 now, they're going to be pretty dangerous in their lineup. And that's such a nice problem to have.
You talked about when the Blue Jays brought in Russell Martin and brought in Josh Donaldson, and then midseason still needed a couple of things to really kickstart the Blue Jays back in 2015. And you said, like, this team isn't done either. Well, what do you think is next on the checklist for Shapiro and Atkins?
I know the biggest need, and it's the biggest need in baseball, and probably for 90% of the teams, is starting pitching. I mean, they really – right now need to get somebody that can go out and just be dependable and give six innings. You know, you don't need somebody that's going to win 20. It may not be Trevor Bauer, who's obviously the best pitcher on the market. That's obviously going to cost a fortune. But just to create some depth with Ryu, behind Ryu, allow Pearson a chance to catch up and get his feet underneath him. And, you know, he's going to be on an innings crunch this year just for the fact the last 2 years he hasn't thrown a lot of innings. That's why I think right now getting a starting pitcher, an old established guy, and I know like I'm not going to say Jay Happ because he just went to Minnesota, but a guy something like that where you can kind of hang your head on the fact that he's going to be competitive, he's going to go out, and you know you're going to get at least five or six out of him every time he does. And that would be a really good first start. And I think as the season progresses, you're going to see teams that get out of the race. You're going to see teams that are trying to shed starting pitching. There's still some starting pitchers in Chicago, maybe Philadelphia, maybe Cincinnati right now, where you can actually still make a trade for one of these guys. I think that's going to be the biggest thing going forward because, you know, if you put too much on your bullpen and you're using them four, five, six innings every night, that catches up on you in the course of 162 games, and you don't want to do that. But the other big thing about that is, like, if they go in with roster sizes of 28, then it becomes a little less important because you can carry three extra relievers. So, I think their biggest need, like every team, is going to be starting pitching, and I'm sure they got some prospect capital that they can trade for guys, and they got some tricks up their sleeve where they can definitely acquire one or two for sure.
We have seen, again, one of the changes in baseball, like you said, maybe a bit more reliance on relief pitchers, and you're not seeing Roy Halladay throwing 125 pitches anymore or anything like that. If I had the timetables right, you had Mark Burley there for a few years. How nice is it just knowing you can pencil a dude in for about 200 innings a year? Like that, from a coaching staff perspective, that must make things a whole lot easier.
Oh, it was great. And you know, people think the R.A. Dickey trade wasn't a great trade, but it was 200 innings and it was six innings every time. And, you know, he pitched 500 and we got to where we got because of him, you know, not in spite of him. And Burley, absolutely. I know his last year he got 199 and two thirds, and he fell a little bit short. But they were great. And it's not like they put up huge win-loss numbers, but, boy, they save your bullpen. And, you know, it's great to use your bullpen, but the more time you use them, they're relievers for a reason. So the more times you expose them, the harder it gets, especially when you're playing, you know, 19 times in your division. You kind of want to hold them out as much as you can to keep them effective. So the 200 inning guys is important. I know we've kind of gotten away from it for a few years, but I think in baseball right now, I think you're seeing how important those guys are just because there's not that many more of them. There's not that much of them anymore.
Chatting with Tim Lipper here on the Big Show, Sportsnet 960 The Fan, a couple more with you. I wasn't necessarily planning on going this way, but you mentioned Ernie Witt at the start of the interview. I said before, I've grown up a lifelong Blue Jays fan, and he was a player that my dad would talk about endlessly. And anytime there was any coaching job ever, oh, Ernie Witt's got to get that. Ernie Witt's got to get that. And you coached alongside him for a number of years. What was coaching with Ernie Witt like, and what made him such a good coach?
Well, that's great. And, you know, and to be honest, we were still doing it. And that's just how I like him so much that, you know, we're still doing a lot of the Team Canada stuff. We hope to qualify for the Olympics this year. Once we get a chance to open up and have the qualifier to go to Tokyo. But the one thing about Ernie is like, he's so professional, much like you probably saw him when you were a kid, much like the way your dad talked about him. He's just really professional. He's really calm. He's got great leadership abilities. And like in the high of the storm, like he's a guy that doesn't waver and you can look at him and you feel like he's in charge. And, you know, you don't catch 17 years in the big leagues without having that kind of demeanor, having that kind of, you know, skill set. And it's kind of, it really transferred over to him in his coaching and his managing. And, you know, unfortunately, probably a big league managing job's not going to come his way, but there was a time where jobs did come up where he definitely would have been a great guy because he handles players so well. He's great with personal relationships. It's totally genuine. It's totally sincere. And he treats people with respect. And I think when you have a guy that's leading your team and has to deal with the media and then has to deal with players, I mean, that's all you can ask for. And that's what he brings to the table every day.
And lastly, I just looking up before this interview, the resume rather extensive, playing out in Mexico, Dominican League, Venezuelan League, Caribbean World Series. I've always thought that looked like the most fun. From a player perspective, what was that experience like?
Winter League's great. And, you know, it's funny. I played in Dominican, played Dominican Championship. I coached in the Dominican. I actually was a third base coach for the Dominican when we won the Caribbean World Series. And it's cleaned up a little bit, but it was like baseball without laws, like the fans. It was crazy. I mean, there was fireworks shooting off in the stands every time they weren't doing checkpoints at the ticket gate when you came in, and it was just chaos. But it was the greatest thing about it was passion. I mean, you know, obviously going through what we did in 15 and 16, you saw a lot of great things. But you know, being a part of like Aguilas in the Dominican League and being a part of an Aguilas Lise game, it's almost like being part of a Yankee Red Sox rivalry or Cubs Cardinals. And it's just crazy. The fans are really passionate. You know, if you have a bad game, you better not go on the street because you know you're going to hear about it. That part gets a little bit scary. But like, it's just baseball the way it is. It's really pure. And the players down there play with a sense of pride for their country, to play in front of their countrymen, which is really neat. And just you get fed from the fans, and it's a great experience. I'm glad I got a chance to do it. I got to do it in three different countries, and each country has its own little set of rivalries. But it's definitely something that you need to experience if you ever get a chance to go down there and see it. It's a lot of fun, and I'm really, really blessed I got a chance to do it.
Tim, this was a lot of fun, man. Thank you for doing this. And we will definitely be catching up again as the season approaches.
Absolutely. Anytime. It's great talking to you.